News Force is a new kind of news impacting your life. Exclusively on NewsForce247.com.
Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up. It's the doo-wop, doo-wop, in all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop, diddy. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Folgers in your cup, or in my case, maybe the Sam's Club brand, because I can't afford the name brands, but it's still pretty good stuff, especially with enough sweetener, creamer, and other additions. But on your radio is I, Adam Lepp. I have several monikers here at the Talking Place, but this morning it's mid-morning coffee break with yours truly. We had so much fun last hour with my guest, Nicholas Lamont Stiles Jr. We just call him Nick, because that name kind of rolls off the tongue in several syllables and steps. So he was the personal assistant to Mary Wilson, a member of the Supremes, who also performed many solo efforts, and we recently passed away, and we discussed the circumstances of that, and we're going to talk more about his relationship as not just an employee, but a friend of the late, great Mary Wilson, and other musical intricacies and stories as we discuss the great old-school R&B music that we all know and love that has been such an influence on music of today and years past. He is broadcasting a live Facebook video. In addition, we are taking your telephone calls, questions, comments, memories of your favorite kind of music. We'd appreciate a telephone call. Let us know that you have the kind of interest that we do in this great R&B old-school type of entertainment, not just the music itself, but the image of these beautiful ladies. 740-383-9944, back for an encore hour here at the Talking Place, quarter after 11 on this rapidly warming up day, June 14th. Happy birthday to Donald Trump. Happy Flag Day. I'm going to turn my attention now across the table again to Nick Stiles, my guest. And tell us again, Nick, people may have missed the first hour. Tell us a little bit about yourself and, again, your personal and professional relationship with Mary Wilson of the Supremes.
Okay. I'm 22. I'm from Lorain, Ohio. I've ran the Supremes fan club for my generation for the last 7 years. Mary Wilson, in November, I became Mary Wilson's assistant, but before that, she was my mentor for the altogether about 3 or 4 years. I'm also a really big music fan, music historian. I would consider myself. That's really about it.
And this kind of came up before. Okay, the Supremes, they're... I'm not going to mention my age, but, you know, I was born in 1964, so let's just do the math.
So you were born the year that their first number
exactly.
One
so
out.
They're even a little bit before my time. I say Three Dog Night and early Elton John. That's about as far back as, I know I age very well, but, you know, I'm pushing that big 6 times 10 number, and I'll really fool a few people with my age, but that's okay. You know, wrinkles are for clothes, right? I don't believe in them. Anyway, Nick, early Elton John, his early songs like Friends, Your Song, Tiny Dancer, Three Dog Night, you know, we talked about B.J. Thomas, recently lost him. That's kind of like the oldest music that I remember that wasn't an oldie. And the Supremes, you know, certainly, you know, Diana Ross or Miss Ross, so she has many, many monikers, I remember. But, and just like with the Beatles, it was when I was too young or before my birth to remember when the stuff was brand new.
Right.
You mentioned you're 22 years old. You were born 98 or 99.
98.
How common is it, Nick, that somebody born almost at the millennium, I mean, you were, I guess, maybe just barely out of diapers when 9/11 occurred. That's the perspective. And I was, well... 37, my goodness. Okay, so I remember it very well. But that's just a perspective. How does someone your age become a fan of this old school music that came about two generations before your birth. And is that unusual? Am I maybe not giving young people enough credit? Or is it just uncommon that someone your age would be such an aficionado of this great older music?
Actually, no. There's actually fans who are younger than I am. I've met fans who are 14, 12, who like Motown, oldies music, just as much as I do. I'll say more so. A lot of people over in the UK love oldies music more than, or appreciates it more than Americans do.
That is unusual. Yeah, I mean, there are 80-year-old people who like a lot of current music.
Right.
Just me, I guess I kind of like the music I grew up with, but there are some exceptions.
Right.
And there are some music I grew up with that I really don't like. And I like Sinatra. I like some of the real old school stuff. People with a unique voice who had a influence that will live indefinitely. And I mentioned last hour, Nick, that I'm not a big fan of a lot of the current music.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the reason why people even half your age like the older music, or are they just kind of like a hodgepodge? Might they be listening to Kesha one minute and listening to the OJs the next minute and listening to Errol Smith the third? Is that
That's how my playlist goes. My playlist goes from Beyonce to Diana Ross to Etta James to Megan Thee Stallion.
So
it is a, I think it's more of an appreciation. A lot of us, you know, who are fans, who are younger, grew up around our grandparents. So our grandparents or our parents played a lot of Motown or Stax, disco, older R&B music, and that's how we grew our appreciation for it, because it was always played in the house.
You're taking your telephone calls here. You know, tell us roughly your age, your kids' ages, and what kind of music you like. That's a good topic, because I may not be quite as cognizant of musical tastes as a function of age as I think I am, but that is a interesting sociological study. 740-383-9944. That is the telephone number. We'd sure love to hear from you. About 20 minutes after the hour of 11 on the 14th of June here at the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. If you ever miss one of our programs, be sure to go to our website, maintained, program, and hosted by yours truly, WWGH1071.com. Nick, when I was born, the Beatles were basically becoming big shots.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis had been around for almost 10 years. I think That's All Right came out in 54. You, of course, know Casey Kasem and all the great musical countdowns of the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The rock era started in 1955 with the rockabilly sound of Elvis and Roy Orbison and many others.
Mm-hmm.
Could that be the reason why some younger people do like the older music? Because with me, what were the oldies? It was stuff from the 30s and 40s, which
right.
had a very different sound. Now, you know, I do like some stuff from Glenn Miller and Ray Conniff and the stuff that is as far back as the 30s. My parents were born in 39. You know, my mom loved Frank Sinatra, Bobby Darin. Some of that stuff that was transitional.
Mm-hmm.
And some of Bobby Darin and Frank Sinatra's songs were more rock. Some were more the big band sound. But because, in your case, being born in 98, the rock era had been 43 years old. I think I'm still good at math. So
mm-hmm.
two generations of the rock era. Is that the reason why we just have more to choose from? That if I were born in 94 instead of 64, that I would say, well, I like some of the current stuff, but, you know, the Beatles, Elvis, Elton John, Conway Twitty, that
mm-hmm.
stuff is just awesome. Is that kind of part of it, just when you were born and what kind of music was there to pick from?
Yeah.
Starting in 55, when music really did have a transformation.
I honestly can't remember, and this is not, you know, to discredit any artists or anything like that, but I honestly can't remember any artists who I liked before liking the Supremes, besides older artists, Michael Jackson, Tina Turner, Ike and Tina Turner, to be specific. I liked them before I liked the Supremes. So, I said it's always been, for me, older music.
Yeah, and you've had much to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you have the personal connection. I mean, you're going to be a big fan of somebody that was like an aunt to you. You called her
right.
aunt,
right.
Mary Wilson, of the Supremes. And even though there was a riff with Diana Ross and other musical colleagues, you said Mary had pictures of Diana Ross at her house.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the mutual respect was certainly there.
I think really they were like sisters. Or like cousins.
Yeah, and sometimes and sisters don't get along.
Yeah,
you love each other, you don't like each other.
Yeah, you don't. No, we're not gonna, hang out every day like we used to. But, that respect and that mutual love is still there, and I feel like that's how it was.
So, certainly Elvis and then the Beatles, and then I would say in the 70s, Elton John. They were the influences of those decades. Are you an Elvis and Beatles fan? And what Paul McCartney still around? Ringo Starr still around? Mm-hmm. Elvis we lost tragically in the 70s. Are you fans? And what kind of influence did do you think that they had?
I'm not really a fan of Elvis. The Beatles I am a fan of. I personally feel this is how I feel about Elvis. He had an influence, definitely, but his influence was taken from others he was influenced from, who didn't get the credit, like Chuck Berry and even I could say James Brown, or who came
yeah,
kind
he
of
had
after.
Many genres, but, the country, he yeah. had, rockabilly was kind of what he was known for, but he had a lot of R&B, and he put gospel, Christmas, and had an image with the sideburns and the clothing.
Now, his image definitely
and
does
his,
have a...
It is his dance moves.
His image definitely does have a... influence. Walking through, driving up the street in Vegas, all you see is Elvis.
Yeah, the Elvis, the pop culture mm-hmm. of Elvis.
Right.
So you love the Beatles,
yes.
And again, two of them are still with us. Mm-hmm. Their influence will last forever. Mm-hmm. And as I talked about last hour, Nick, a lot of the music we like is simpler. It isn't overproduced. The early Aerosmith, and I think one reason why I kind of stopped liking Aerosmith. As of the late 80s, they were my favorite band in the 70s. The music was just simple. You listen to the first record, it had the blues rock feel to it. It wasn't overproduced, and you could just hear the great guitar, drums, bass, and Steven Tyler and his great vocal range, kind of the wailing vocals that he's still known for. Mm-hmm. And the Beatles, help. Simple song. They played music. They sang together. Paul McCartney, you kind of think of him as the most well-known member and maybe the lead singer, but they all sang. And they all had good solo careers. And honestly, I think Ringo Starr had the best solo career. I love the No No song, It Don't Come Easy. His great cover of Only You by the Platters. So, also showed a lot of great musical diversity. Again, the No No song being a great novelty tune. And Paul McCartney, arguably bigger as a solo artist. It's kind of hard to say. They kind of said that about Glenn Frey. He was bigger outside of the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But either way, Paul McCartney, a huge name. I mean, I don't know who's bigger.
Mm-hmm.
He's still around, and still has the influence. And he's known as a nice guy. I never had the chance of meeting him. It'd kind of cool if I did, but right. He has that nice guy image. And do you have a particular Beatles song that you like?
What comes to mind first is "Here Comes the Sun."
Yep, that's a good one.
That's what comes to mind.
Hey Jude, I kind of like. It's just repetitive. The last 4 minutes are all the same. It's the I don't want to sing it for you and torture anybody, but. Many, many great songs.
Now, the Supremes covered a lot of their songs. Yesterday, Michelle, Hey Jude is another one they covered.
I didn't know they did Hey Jude. I'll have to look that one up. I know the Jay Giles band did Where Did Our Love Go? You probably know that from the Supremes. I think a couple other bands.
That album was released on my birthday.
Oh, and then...
And that was their first number one.
Right, and "You Won't See Me" by Anne Murray was written and also performed by the Beatles. You mm-hmm. probably know that. So, and Anne Murray being one of those country pop divas. So, musicians of other genres kind of covered the stuff that the Beatles did. Mm-hmm. And it's good when you see that. The Jay Giles band, very different from "Where Did Our Love Go." They had a blues influence.
Right.
But I think the Supremes are more the girl group soul, a little different than leaning toward the blues direction. But their "Where Did Our Love Go" was quite good.
Yeah.
And I guess a song that you can cover and you can put your own personality into it. Sometimes we hear these covers, they sound nothing like the original, maybe better or worse, and sometimes they're almost the same, like you're not even quite sure who's singing them.
So if I'm mistaken, Hall & Oates did You Can't Hurry Love?
You've Lost That Loving Feeling. they've done. I'm not sure about You Can't Hurry Love. Brandon may be joining us shortly. He might know because he's also a walking encyclopedia. His main thing is hair bands, but he knows stuff from the 70s and he loves disco. So he may be joining us here at the microphone soon, and we'll have a great conversation about this music that we all know and love. It's just interesting to hear the musicians cover the Blue Eyed Soul, Hall & Oates, and Righteous Brothers, being arguably the two biggest Blue Eyed Soul duos. How much of an influence did they have? Do you think, you know, if I were to get a chance to talk to Daryl Hall, do you think he'd be a big Supremes fan? Do you think that Mary Wilson and Diana Ross and the others influenced his musical style?
I actually think I have a concert poster of them opening for the Supremes. I want to say 66, the Righteous Brothers open for the Supremes. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, this
that'd be a question I'd be interested in.
Yeah, hard to say too. It's like if we got a chance to talk to other musicians that we love, Paul McCartney, Daryl Hall, they might come to mind. What would we want to ask them? You know, let's look at this because you're a Beatles fan. You obviously are a Paul McCartney fan, as I am. If Paul McCartney were sitting right there with that cool British accent of his, maybe two questions you'd want to ask him? There's a good question, Nick, that I had to think of a few things that might be not just a bit surprising, but I'd like to hear what your answer would be, because I honestly couldn't tell you. What would be maybe a couple questions you'd want to ask Paul McCartney?
I think my questions first would be the Supreme questions. You know, well, I was going to say, did he meet the Supremes? But actually, I do have a picture of him with all three of them. They were performing in London's Talk of the Town, and they were backstage and at the reception, and he was pictured with all three of them. But you know, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I think that probably one of the things that will come to mind, you know what I mean, if it were to happen. But
yeah, it's because I didn't prepare for this interview. I had a few things that come to mind, but I do better, Nick, when I'm off the cuff. That's just how I am. I don't know. I guess it's just the radio experience. I could list questions, but I go off on a tangent, but I think that they're good tangents.
Right.
We are taking your telephone calls here live in the studio on South Prospect Street in Marion, 740-383-9944. My guest, Nick Stiles, a R&B old school soul music historian, aficionado of all kinds of music, but especially the great songs of the 60s and 70s. I guess the curator of the Supremes fan club, the Supreme fan, I guess. Nick, as we've talked about, you were the personal assistant to Mary Wilson, a member of the Supremes who also sang on her own, and she recently passed away. We talked about you were the person who discovered that she had died. And
yeah.
Tragic. I'm really at a loss for words. But on a happier note, when you were her personal assistant, what kind of stuff? We talked about what you called her, Auntie Mary. Which was just so sweet, because she was like an aunt.
Yeah.
Not really a boss. She was an aunt.
And not even just to me. Any fan who met Mary and grew a personal relationship with Mary often described her as that aunt figure or, like you said, big sister or best friend, because that's how she communicated with all her fans. Even the ones who met her at, you know, meet and greets. She made everyone feel welcome. No autograph was gone unsigned. She would stand hours signing autographs.
That's not really typical. Now, as I mentioned, Henry Winkler is known as one of the nicest celebrities, you know, and a few that may not be quite so nice, but they do have time, they have families, and you know, your hand gets tired.
Right.
How typical is that? Is she maybe one of the nicest singers? Are we not exaggerating in saying that she was just the sweetest of the sweethearts?
I personally think that, you know, not a lot of celebrities do that. I've heard different stories where people have said, you know, oh, well, today's my day off, or not right now, you know, no pictures right now. I don't have, you know, makeup on. No, was never her. From what I hear, I could tell you about my experiences with her, but from what other people have told me, you know, that wasn't her. She was signed every autograph, took every picture, be in an airport, you know, just getting off a plane, and TMZ and a bunch of fans would come up to her, and
she wasn't bothered by the paparazzi.
No.
Do you think she liked it? I mean, some people just like the spotlight. I guess if that's the kind of person she was. It's something we need more of in this world.
I think she liked it to the extent for the reason of it didn't happen too often. When we went out in public, no one knew who she was. There was times when we stopped and talked to people, and no one knew who she was. I think also the reason why that was with the mask too. You know, you really can't see who's underneath the mask, but no one knew who she was. So I think, you know, that's we did go out to eat twice. We went out to eat twice, and we didn't have a mask on, and no one knew who she was. She was just a regular old lady sitting down eating dinner or lunch.
That would just be fascinating to just go out to eat with Mary Wilson. I imagine she had great stories that you could just talk to her.
Yeah.
I mean, did she have a good sense of humor? I mean, you know,
yes.
Me, I joke around and don't take myself too seriously. Was she kind of always serious? She didn't mind a good joke. Did she have a potty mouth at all? I mean, some people, you never know. They let loose and they... You see a different side of them.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say a potty mouth, but she definitely said whatever she wanted to say. There was one time specifically I had wore this really tight bodysuit to her house. And it was only because it was wash day and only thing I had that was pants was that. So I wore it to her house and she opened the door. She said, "Hi." And she stopped and looked at me. And then the whole day I was over there, she just kept looking at me and staring at me, never said anything. So the next day, I came over with a pair of jogging pants on. And she said, "You know, these pants are a lot better than the ones you had on yesterday." And I said, "Well, you know, you made a face at me." And she was like, "Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to." I was like, "No, it's fine, it's fine." That was another thing. Every time I would say, "No, it's fine, it's fine. Honey, I know I'm fine. You don't got to keep telling me." But she's like, "Yeah, no, it's fine." I said, "No, it's fine." She said, "You know, I just want to let you know when you know, you don't accentuate certain body parts. And wearing certain clothes give off an image, you know." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Yeah, but like that's that grandma, auntie type of advice that she would give.
Talking with Nick Stiles, who was a personal assistant, friend, and a mentee of late, great Mary Wilson, a R&B singer, very beautiful lady. Some interesting anecdotes, and we're so thrilled to have him share this information with us. Here at the Talking Place, we have unique guests all the time, especially on the Scott Spears radio program. But, you know, today, it's here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, who is I. 37 minutes after the hour of 11, thank you for joining us, as always, here on the Talking Place. If you ever have a question, comment, concern, complaint, or otherwise want to communicate with me through email, just like Hillary and Melania, we have a private email server. And it's, again, like the website, curated, programmed, and hosted by yours truly, adam@wwgh1071.com. So, Nick, speaking about your employment with Mary Wilson as her personal assistant, you were living in Vegas at the time.
Yes.
Now, did she have shows in Vegas? She was recording albums, but did she have shows? And if she did, what was your role? Were you kind of like a roadie, or did you introduce her? Or
I never got a chance to go on tour with her or do shows with her because of the pandemic.
Right, it was during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So,
but there was shows coming up. I think she had a show in May in Vegas that was from last year that had to be rescheduled. So there was shows coming up, but she just didn't make it.
So it was during the pandemic, mm-hmm. almost exclusively, which was certainly an unusual time.
Right.
And you were talking about you were wearing masks, and neither of you was really recognizable.
Right.
And that would be kind of different.
Right. We talk about this 20 years from now, they're like, "What are you talking about?"
Mary Wilson. And she had a look. She had the blonde hair. I mean, mm-hmm. beautiful lady. And I mean, even you hear her talk, mm-hmm. I would think you would probably know who she was.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Paul McCartney, I think. You would recognize him if he were to just walk into the Speedway station.
I would recognize him. I probably wouldn't recognize anyone else, but
yeah,
from the Beatles.
But the voice, you know, you don't hear a lot of British accents here in Marion. So I think you'd put two and two together and realize that it was in fact Paul in the flesh. But doing this during a pandemic, that certainly adds to the equation.
Right.
What was it? Was it difficult? And was it? Did it add stress? And it's something we'll never forget.
It did, because one of the concerns was making sure I didn't have COVID. So before I came out to Vegas, one of the things she wanted me to make sure was I had all my tests. You know, I got tested before I left, and then once I got to Vegas, got tested again, just to make sure I didn't have COVID.
So many precautions, mm-hmm. and just changes in the usual protocol.
Right.
And unfortunately not getting a chance to be an assistant of sorts when she was singing live.
Right.
So it just did add to the difficulty. Mm-hmm. So you weren't living at her house. You had an apartment or a house in Vegas. And
my cousin lives out there, so that was a coincidence. Like, that was the good thing about that.
So you were staying with your cousin, then mm-hmm. you would just drive to Mary's house. Yeah. Was most of your assisting work done at her residence?
At her house. There was a few times where she sent me home with stuff to do, but everything was at her house. I would go over to her house at least 3 or 4 times a week.
Okay. As again, businesses were closed. The mm-hmm. strip wasn't what we would think of it as. So
right.
the whole lifestyle was a pandemic
right.
situation. When she would send work home with you, what kind of stuff would you be doing?
The first time she sent something home with me, it was to organize her DVD file. You know, make a list of everything that she had in her possession of, like Supreme footage or footage of her solo. Make sure everything was put into wrote down so that if we were looking for it, we know it's in here. Because I was helping her with her YouTube channel as well, so we were doing a lot of like sending footage out to the other guys who helped with the YouTube channel. There was a guy who specifically posted all the videos, so I had to make a list just to make sure we had what we had, you know, was there. Another thing I had to do was dates. Keep a record of all the dates. Like, you know, when was this album released? When did this concert happen? When were they on this TV show? Stuff like that.
So just different types of duties and things mm-hmm. that would be different if we were not in the middle of the COVID situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I think I probably would still be doing some of that stuff, only because, like I said, the YouTube channel, she was trying to keep up with all the dates and everything like that, so that we could post, like, on this day, the Supremes performed on the Ed Sullivan Show, or on this day, the Supremes released this song, kind of like that.
Now, she mentioned had some heart troubles, mm-hmm. and that was a contributing factor to her passing.
No, I didn't know any of this until after she passed away.
Oh, okay, so you, yeah. I was going to ask, like, did you bring her to doctor's appointments or help
go no,
to
I
pharmacy
did.
For her? I was thinking, for I mean, she was older, in her 70s, mm-hmm. so that's something you might do as a personal assistant, even to a younger person.
Right.
I mean, coordinate doctor visits, so you can pick up her contact lenses or something. I mean, things like that for mm-hmm. people of any age. Was that kind of part of your duties?
I did make one doctor's appointment. She was complaining about a neck pain. So, just sharp pain in her neck. So, I made a doctor's appointment for her for that. That actually happened that Friday before she passed away. So, that Friday before she passed away, she had that appointment. And so, this whole time, she's having this pain. She's thinking that she, you know, has, like, a pinched nerve or something. Which I later found out after doing research of my own, that neck pain, which could be compared to a pinched nerve, is a sign of having a heart attack.
Right, it could have been a mini stroke,
mm-hmm.
Which is sad.
Right.
And I said, I have no words, Nick, to describe how you would have felt knowing she had passed away. And
yeah.
Being a bit of a surprise also.
Yeah, because I was just supposed to come go to work. That was the I was with her Saturday. Saturday before she passed away. Sunday I was off. Monday I was supposed to be at work. So I called her that morning around 11 something. So I was calling to see if she wanted to pick up her mail. Because Saturday I was supposed to do it, but they were closed. So I wanted to make sure that I didn't need any like verification or anything like that, or to have her call and say my sister is coming to pick up my mail. But she didn't answer the phone. So I just went along and just went and picked up the mail, got to her house. I'm knocking on the door, no answer. So I called her daughter, who coincidentally, I finally got her phone number Saturday before I had left her house. Her daughter runs her company and all her business stuff. So my hiring and paycheck and all that, I had to talk to her about, which I had been trying to get Mary to give me her contact information since November, but she kept delaying it, which there was things that Mary was, she was kind of busy. So it kind of like slipped her mind, she said. So once I finally got her contact information, was Saturday. We did talk Monday about my employment and how I'd be paid and how much I would be paid and all that. We did talk about that, but it was the day she passed away.
I had asked you about, was going to ask you about that. So her daughter was like her bookkeeper.
Yeah.
And so her daughter would just write the paychecks.
Yes.
So it wasn't a case where Mary just signed the check and it's like, well, the check with her autograph is maybe worth more than the check, but that wasn't the case. Plus, mm-hmm. you had, I'm sure, many Mary autographs, and you have photos on your Facebook. So mm-hmm. many ways to remember her, and she was very gracious with her fans and her employees. How many employees did she have? You were the personal assistant. Did she have a manager, an agent?
She had a publicist. I don't know about manager and agent. I never spoke with anyone like that, but I know her publicist. She had a publicist. Hairstylist, makeup artist, although she did do her own hair and makeup because she wore wigs, and so it's kind of easier to keep up with that herself. But when she couldn't keep up with it, she would send it off to someone, like I said, the lady who I got the phone number from, Diana. She would send it off to her, or if there was someone else, I don't, that's the only one I know of.
So the publicist, would that person arrange the concerts? Let's just say Mary is still with us, and mm-hmm. we're kind of winding down COVID, and so maybe they want to get her to perform at the Marion Popcorn Festival. That would just be fantastic. So how would that be arranged?
I think they would email her publicist. Her publicist would make sure it fit in with her schedule, and they would go from there and the negotiation.
So it's a chain of command, but mm-hmm. you would be involved, and you're saying in the post-COVID world, you would have duties.
No, there was one booking that I did, was in the process of doing. A school for arts for kids in New York was trying to get Mary to do like a Zoom meeting with all the kids and have her come, you know, kind of give like an influence of what the Supremes were and who they were. I was talking back and forth with the guy who ran the school, but that never happened. But like you said, as a chain of command, he went through me. She sent him over to me, then I had to send him over to the publicist.
So that would be just be kind of exciting. I mean, it's fun that you get paid for. Yeah. And that's the cool part of it. Again, Nick mentioned you're in your early 20s. Do you see yourself as having a role of this type with another musician? Where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years? I know you have a clothing line, that you're working on, but mm-hmm. do you see this as a career in the future for a different artist?
Yeah. Who? I don't know. But I definitely wouldn't mind if another artist, for example, an artist heard your show and said, well, what's his contact information? You know, I definitely wouldn't mind.
You never quite know who might be listening. Again, Sam Donaldson listens. He calls Scott from time to time. Mm-hmm. So we have many people with broadcasting and doing it online. You really never know whose ears are tuned to his or her radio receiver.
Right.
13 minutes before 12 with Adam here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, a special 2-hour show today with my guest, Nick Stiles. discussing his work with the late, great Mary Wilson of the Supremes and on her own, and just his knowledge and interest in the great R&B old school music and some of the newer stuff, too, that he has a liking for. We talked last hour, Nick, about some of your favorite male R&B groups. Mm-hmm. The Isley Brothers from Cincinnati, another Ohio-based band.
Yeah.
The OJs, Ohio Players from Dayton, they had a big influence. I mentioned I like some the two male falsettos that come to mind, Russell Tompkins Jr. of the Stylistics and Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Right.
Imagine you're fans of those. Do you like the male falsetto voices? Do you like the more funky sound of the Ohio Players? Any kind of music that you and voice types that you find especially palatable?
I really like when I can think of like male groups and male singers that I like. I like, I guess you could say, more of the slower R&B.
So we bring up Peebo Bryson, mm-hmm. Jeffrey Osborne.
Yeah.
Another singer we lost too early, Teddy Pendergrass. Mm-hmm. His voice, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. Mm-hmm. That raspy voice, he was just awesome. And he had, a duet with Whitney Houston prior to Whitney's becoming a superstar.
I think I, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, incredible voice. And, always liked the Peebo Bryson song, "The Best of Romances Deserve Second Chances." That's one of the best song lines I've ever heard.
Yeah.
"On the Wings of Love" by Jeffrey Osborne. So those singers definitely are favorites of yours.
Yeah.
Of the more recent musicians, you mentioned that hip-hop doesn't get enough credit sometimes, and for myself included, as I do just feel that the older music is better. Mm-hmm. And there are several current musicians that I think have great talent, but are they really at the level of the 70s people? Katy Perry, yes, Lady Gaga, mm-hmm. Those kind of come to mind. Yeah, Rihanna, many of them. But it is the image.
Yeah.
And with MTV, with all the fancy makeup and all the special effects, does this image maybe go a little too far? You know, Lady Gaga comes to mind. She's often compared to Madonna. There are similarities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Madonna, big on MTV. One of the top, you know, along with Springsteen and a few others, one of the top musicians from the 80s, and certainly someone I played a lot in my radio days back during that time. But do you think Lady Gaga and some of them, do they overdo the image a little too much? Do they change their hair and their makeup and their clothing to an extreme? Should they maybe concentrate on the music or maybe take a lesson from the Supremes, where you mix in the image and the music to the best possible combination?
Well, I think Lady Gaga, when you mention her, I think she definitely is one of those artists who has done both. As far as, you know, the extreme looks, that's what she's known for. But I feel like her music goes along with her looks. I'm a fan of Lady Gaga.
Sometimes it's like they look like they sound. And that's a good point, Nick. Is that kind of where the Supremes were? They looked like they sounded. They had a sweet look, and they were beautiful.
Yeah, innocent.
And they kind of looked like that.
Yeah. The Supremes' look was innocent. It was innocent with a sexy, glamorous feel to it.
And like Joan Jett, she kind of looks like a lady rocker. You know, mm-hmm. Great talent. I Love Rock and Roll, one of the biggest hits of all time, also from my previous radio days. So kind of looks like she sounds. Sometimes they do that. But if we see someone on MTV, on interviews, in magazines, on social media, we kind of know what they look like at the same time that we know what they sound like.
Right.
And that was different back two or three generations ago.
Yeah.
And is that good? Is that bad? And that will always be a question that people will ask.
I think it's good because it gives an artist something to be known for. I feel like your image is everything, good or bad.
Mention, you know, the hair bands, and are they known more for their outlandish outfits, all the hairspray and the jewelry, or are they known for the music? And sometimes it's both. Mm-hmm. But you have to make a good balance, and I would agree with you that with the Supremes, their balance of their outfits and their looks and their voices and their image. I mean, the kind of a squeaky clean girls you'd like to have as your neighbors or your sisters.
Right.
That helped with their sound.
Right.
But also the production, the the backing musicians, the instrumentalists, the lyrics, that was all part of it.
And see, I'm happy you mentioned that, because that's something that a lot of us fans, Supreme fans, often talk about. Martha and the Vandellas were just as big as the Supremes, but because they didn't have that, you know, your best friend. They didn't have, I guess you could say, what was called the white image, as far as they appealed to a white audience with the innocent look. This, you know, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas were more, I guess you could say, before their time. They were more of what you would compare a 70s girl group. You know, if you look at like the Pointer Sisters or Sister Sledge, or they had more of a funkier look, a funkier sound. Supremes had more of a...
And I think the Pointer Sisters, that's a great one to bring up. They started funky with, remember, How Long, Bet You Got a Chick on the Side. They were fun. Then they became very mainstream pop.
Mm-hmm.
I Want a Man with a Slow Hand. And they backed up Bruce Willis on Respect Yourself. That was a great, mm-hmm. great combination. Kind of an odd couple, but, you know, it worked really well. So they evolved.
Yeah.
And I guess that would be part of it.
Yeah.
And with the Supremes, they appeal to all races, yeah. all ages, all yeah. types of people, and they still do.
Yes,
and that is important. You know, one thing about music, it's very diverse,
mm-hmm.
and I think it brings people together.
Right.
And we need to do more of that in the world. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. And that was part of the image, I think.
And I think that's what Motown Berry Gordy's dream was, to bring everyone together. He knew that music is something that brought everyone together. Mary Wilson said, you know, she remembers doing the Motown review tours in the early days, and how this was around the time with the Freedom Riders. So they were all the Motown artists were on the bus. So she said, remember a few times where, you know, the bus got shot at because they thought that they were, you know, protesters. But she said, you know, sometimes those same people who didn't realize who we were would be at the shows. And there'd be white kids on one side and black kids on the other side. And there was a line in the middle. She said as the tour went on, she said the line was broke. She said there was one time where everybody was dancing and ended up dancing into each other. And it broke down the line, so everybody started mixing together. The police were trying to stop it, but, you know... I think Smokey Robinson, she said, is the one who stopped the show and said, no, if they want to dance, let them dance. If not, we're not going to perform. And that's how that...
I think we need more of that togetherness.
Yeah.
Music brings people together, and that's just a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with Nick Stiles here, a Motown and R&B music historian, a personal assistant to the late Mary Wilson, We didn't quite talk, Nick, and we got about 4 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
You are, I guess, the president and head person at the Supremes Fan Club. So tell us about the Supremes Fan Club, you being the Supreme fan, and how can one join this club?
Well, it's not really, you know, how, you know, the older fan clubs, you have to write in and they send you, like, a membership packet.
You got a T-shirt and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how is this a little... But it's similar. How is
it
different in 2021 in the age of social media?
It's digital. So it's not a fan club, but a fan page. And just like, comment, share. I'm trying to put together... this is the 60th anniversary of the Supremes. So 60 years ago...
Don't say that, because they're like when I was born. So that makes me think about my birthday. But yeah, that's okay. 1961. Yeah.
That's when they signed their January 15th or 14th. They signed their contracts.
So Diana and Mary were like 16 years old.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
That's when they first signed their contracts with Motown. Now, of course, they didn't get their first hit until 64. But that's their first signed their first contract. So this is 60th anniversary.
See,
this
I told
year.
You, folks. He is a walking encyclopedia of this stuff. So. Yeah, tell us about your fan page or your digital fan club in the age of social media. About 3 minutes left here.
So I feel like the age of social media definitely is big. And as far as influence, It's kind of like how Gossip Magazine would be back in the day, or, you know, something of that sort. Now, the fan page is kind of, and I'm not just the only one, there's a lot of different other fan pages, Supreme fan pages, and Diana Ross and individual members have their own fan pages that fans have started. It's kind of just how we show our appreciation and our love for the group and the girls.
How can one get involved with this fan? Is it a Facebook, or what's
Facebook
the way to get involved?
Instagram. The Supremes, _Supremes_ fan page. And you just search that, and it will come up.
But you have the Supreme one, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, almost out of time with my guest, Nick. Thank you so much for coming by. I just wanted to ask you real quickly, in your work with Mary Wilson, I'm sure she knew many other famous singers and other celebrities. Anybody you met through Mary that just kind of sticks out as someone you just enjoyed meeting?
Brenda Holloway. Like I said, I'm a big fan of hers. Yep. She's also the reason why Supremes, I feel like, got their number one hit. Well, although they, Where'd Our Love Go was released in 64, summer 64. Dick Clark had a tour called the Caravan of Stars Tour. Brenda Holloway had a hit called Every Little Bit Hurts. And Dick Clark wanted Brenda Holloway for the tour, so he went to Berry Gordy, asked if she can do the tour. And Berry Gordy said no. He said, only way you can get Brenda Holloway is if you take the Supremes. Dick Clark said, I don't know what the Supremes are or who they are, but I don't want them. I want Brenda Holloway. And he was like, well, they have this number one hit. This song is going to be a number one hit. You know, he's trying to, you know, gas him up. And he's like, no, I'm not taking them. He was like, well, if you want Brenda Holloway, you have to take the Supremes. So that's how the Supremes got on the Dick Clark Caravan of Stars tour. And Diana and Mary both have stated that they feel Where'd Our Love Go would not have been a hit if they didn't get on the Caravan of Stars tour.
Sometimes you just never know what song will break through. Mm-hmm. I want to thank again Nick Stiles, my guest here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Have a great rest of your Monday. Thank you
for listening. This is WWGH Radio.